Hello, this is Mr. McFeely from Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, and you know, Charlie Evers is a Marion radio legend, and you can catch him right here on WWGH 107.1 FM and streaming live on the internet at WWGH101.com. Charlie also takes your calls on anything under the sun by calling this number, 740-383-9944. Speedy delivery.
The Fahey Bank Charlie Evers Show every Wednesday and Thursday, 10:10 a.m. till 12 noon, and Friday, 1:10 p.m. till 3 p.m. on WWGH Radio 107.1 FM.
15 minutes past the hour. Scott Spears back with you here on the Now program. And we certainly all the talk in the country today is about health care. And we are very proud to be joined by Leslie Dock, who is the former senior counselor for the Department of Health and Human Services under President Barack Obama. Mr. Dock, how are you?
Well, I could be better given the subject we're talking about, but other than that, good, and thanks for having me on.
Well, I tell you what, we've got 10 minutes here, so I want to delve right into this.
Okay.
It's a big deal for people here in Ohio. Our governor, John Kasich, is not happy because of the Medicaid reductions with the drug problem here in Ohio. What is wrong with the Republicans' plan? Why is it not better than the Affordable Care Act?
Well, for a number of reasons, but first, it will reduce the number of people with insurance in this country by 24 million, by 14 million people just in the next few years. So it leaves a lot of people uncovered and therefore without the care they need. And also it will raise costs for people, and it does that in a number of ways. It reduces the tax credits that people receive over time compared to what they receive today. And it also, according to the CBO report, increases deductibles and out-of-pocket. So it actually hurts rather than helps on the cost side. And third, it strikes a particular blow at seniors who are asked to pay considerably more, 25-50% increases in their premiums, and a doubling of the number of seniors projected to be uninsured. Dramatically hurt states like Ohio that have taken the leadership under your governor to expand Medicaid to take care of more people. Medicaid expansion will be effectively eliminated, which is another blow for seniors and also a blow for folks, many, many folks who rely on Medicaid funding to help them with their substance abuse and mental health issues.
You know, here's the question I have, because I'm watching this very intently, and it looks like it's really up in the air on whether this passes the House or not. But definitely in the Senate, there's going to be trouble because the Republicans can only lose two votes, and it looks like they've lost 4-5 already. So if this doesn't pass, the repeal for Obamacare is in there. In your opinion, what happens then?
You know, Scott, if I can, I've got to go backwards a little bit, have a slight disagreement on your political prognostication, which I wish were guaranteed, but it isn't, because I think that while we've had 11 or 12 senators now, Republican senators, express concern with the House bill, very few have said they're going to vote no. And what we expect to happen is that there'll be a lot of arm twisting and arm breaking over the next few weeks. And so from our perspective, the fate of the healthcare system is very, very much still right in front of us. I think, you've mentioned your governor, but your senator, Mr. Portman's quite important as well as a member of the majority. He's expressed concern about Medicaid, but we don't yet understand, for example, how he'll choose to vote on this bill.
Well, one thing that's confusing to me, our representative for this district in the House is Jim Jordan. Jim Jordan, very vocal that he is not going to support this bill the way it is. Now, all that being said, let's say I guess what I'm confused about is Senator Ryan last week said two quotes that were fascinating to me. He called it a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity and the best and only chance to change Obamacare. Are those things true, and why are they true?
Yeah, I don't think they're true. I think they're probably the only chance they have to repeal Obamacare, but really the best opportunity to improve the law, which is what I think most of the American people want. They want to keep the good parts, but there are parts for improvement, would be to stop this rush, an ideological rush, to get this thing done in a few weeks when we know it's going to hurt people. And instead, take a step back, sit down with Democrats, work it out. You know, there are areas of agreement. There are issues like drugs costing too much money. I think that could be worked through. There's going to be a lot of agreement for something that makes a difference there. Something that tries to help people afford their health care by looking at out-of-pocket costs and doing something about that. So I think there are areas for agreement, but they Republicans have not chosen that pathway.
That has been the question everybody asks. If this is bad, this plan they have now is bad, why can't they just work on fixing Obamacare? What is the thinking with Republicans and Democrats right now?
Well, I think that the Republicans could choose to work on it, to keep what's right and fix what needs to be improved. But they have promised, they believe, their base a repeal of Obamacare. And that is what they're intent on doing, even though the polling numbers don't support that. The people are very worried about this. So I think they have a political agenda they simply are afraid to let go of. I think on the Democratic side, they've made clear, I think, two things. One, they're not going to work with the Republicans on this wholesale repeal, but they are willing to work with the Republicans on when you take the gun away from their heads and when you stop some of the most draconian recommendations. So I do think, and even some of the Republicans, like Senator Alexander in Tennessee, the chairman of the relevant committee, have said, you know, we can work something out. But I think they've chosen not to.
I do think you're right, in essence, that the Republicans have promised that they would do this. They've promised it for 7 years. Now they have the opportunity to do it. So they're afraid that it might be political suicide if they don't. Do you think it would be if they don't do it?
Well, I believe that I'm not an expert on all of this politics, but I do believe when you hear what people are saying, that and one of the reasons you see so many folks like Governor Kasich and others saying that they're concerned is because this is a matter of life and death for people. This is not a kind of abstract political issue that people don't experience. This is about people's lives. And so my own belief is that reducing insurance for 24 million people so they don't get the health care they need, raising premiums on seniors, making it difficult for seniors to have long-term care to age at home. Those things, I believe, are fundamentally more politically dangerous because they are worse for people's lives. And at some point, I would hope, folks would get past this kind of ideological rush and focus on the people they represent and look for much more of a common solution.
With 3 minutes left, I want to slip two quick questions in here. How do people stop this if they don't want it to happen?
I think what they need to do is to get in touch with their elected representatives. As I mentioned, Senator Portman, I think, plays a particularly important role. He's a thoughtful senator. He's expressed his concern about the impact of this on Medicaid in Ohio and the people in Ohio. I think having him hear from those who think that this approach that the House is pursuing is the wrong approach. It should be stopped. The Senate should start over and do the right thing. That would be a great message for all elected representatives to hear.
With 2 minutes left, and I know you've pointed out things about this bill that you do not like, but what, in your opinion, is the single worst part? If people hear that this bill passes, what is the single worst thing that's going to happen? Medical.
Yeah, well, I think what it means is that people will be denied the care they need because the prices will go up and people will lose the help they need to get affordable insurance. You add those things together, and that means more people will get sick, they won't be diagnosed, they won't be treated, and their health will suffer.
What is the time frame on this? How long do you think people have to get these phone calls into their representative?
I think it's only a matter of weeks. What the leadership in the Republican leadership, Speaker Ryan, has said is he hopes to move this bill forward with no hearings by the week of the 20th. And the leader, Republican leader in the Senate, has basically said he wants this done by April 7th and basically is daring his Republican colleagues to vote for it. And the reason they're in such a rush is that they know that the more people understand this bill, the more opposition. And they're deathly afraid, I think. They all go away back to recess, and they have to face their constituents the week of April 7th. And I think the last thing they want to do is to hear is to come back and hear from the constituents why they need to stop doing this. They want it over and behind them, although and that's why they're in such a rush.
Leslie Dock, former senior counselor for the Department of Health and Human Services under President Barack Obama, thank you so much for the time.
Yep, thanks for having me.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Take care.
We're going to take a quick break and come back with Eleanor Clift right after. Actually, you know what? We're not going to break. We've got about 5 minutes before we need to get to Eleanor. Does anybody have an opinion on the phone call there or anything else we've talked about? We have about 5 minutes here. 740-383-9944. Remember, Eleanor Clift from the Daily Beast will be coming up here in about 5 minutes. And we'll ask her the question about the tax returns and how she feels about them and why they need to be released and maybe not released. But health care continues to be the topic that is being talked about, so it is always fascinating to have somebody on. 740-383-9944. If you have a question, give us a ring and we'll get you up on the air. We do have a few minutes here. 740-383-9944. Remember, our trivia questions have not been answered yet. This one's still out there all these many days later. The Big Crosley Company that owned WLW Radio, WLWC Television, WLWI, WLWD, sold out in the 1960s to a big company that effectively dismantled the broadcasting dynasty of the Crosleys. What company did Crosley sell out to? 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. Also, Sally Flowers, longtime Columbus, Ohio television personality, radio personality, even did a television show right here in Marion on CATV in the early 1970s. Had a very popular show in Columbus called Meetin' Time at Moore's in the 1950s. When that show ended, I believe after a 9-year run, she went over to Channel 6 and did another very popular show with Don Basham and Gene Fullen. And they used to have celebrities on like Betty White and Alan Ludden and Aunt Jemima and Kirk Douglas and John Forsythe. What was the name of that show? It was kind of a game show, sort of. But it was also a talk show. And Sally Flowers was a part of that. What was the name of that show? 740-383-9944. You answer any of these. You only have to answer one. And you can win a To Die For cupcake, 2 free bowling games for a group of 4 to Buckeye Lanes here in Marion, celebrating 90 years of service. Or you can win a Jags hat or a CRT insulated mug or a Jags can cooler that you set your soda can or beer can or whatever you have in to keep your can cold and keep your hand warm. Or we have bags from Jags that we can give you. 740-383-9944. And the final question we still have out there, Bill Nimmo, who was Johnny Carson's first announcer on Who Do You Trust up on the network. Bill Nimmo left Johnny Carson to go to a bigger role on a big network television series, paving the way for Ed McMahon to take his place and eventually go on with Johnny Carson to The Tonight Show for 30 years. But Bill Nimmo left Who Do You Trust, where he was Johnny Carson's first announcer, to go to this role on television, which was a big role at the time. Unfortunately, did not last as long as Ed McMahon's run with Johnny. But where did Bill Nimmo go when he left Johnny Carson's Who Do You Trust? 740-383-9944. And again, remember, Bill Nimmo was a WLW radio and television alum. That's where he got his start. 740-383-9944. And here's another interesting question for you. There was another guy, television broadcaster in Cleveland, Ohio, who is the father of a big-time movie star. What is that guy's name? 740-383-9944. Hey, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Was that Sinclair Broadcasting?
Not Sinclair, but that's a good guess. Thank you. We're going to get this Crosley question before it's all said and done, I promise. We're going to take a quick break because we're going to come back with Eleanor Cliff here from the Daily Beast momentarily, and we might have some time at the end of the program to get back into these trivia questions and get your opinions on the toll-free line, 740-383-994. But we're going to take a break and come back right after this. It's Now with Scott Spears, Monday through Thursday, right here on WWGH Radio from 1210 to 2 p.m. Listen to the program for guests like these. The voice of Ursula from The Little Mermaid and actress Pat Carroll.
And I think villains are the most fascinating people as an actress to play. They have to them, they have more color to them. Isn't that a shame that goodness isn't more fascinating, or our world would be better?
I guess.
But there is something fascinated about tacky people, mean people. They're colorful. Good people always seem to be a little bit, ugh, yucky. But bad people always have edges to them. That's why they're so wonderful to play for actors.
That?
Because you can pick all the things in life as a human being that annoy you or that you would like to do to be really rotten mean. Most people are too afraid to be rotten mean because we want people's approval so badly. And we know that being rotten mean isn't going to get us that. But, oh, villains for actors are the best things in the world to play.
You know, Pat, that almost describes our current political situation in this country.
Doesn't it just? I'd never thought of that, but you're quite right.
Join me Monday through Thursday, 1210 to 2 p.m. right here on WWGH Radio. We'll take your calls, 740-383-9944. Streaming live on the internet at www.wwgh1071.com. Hey, Scott Spears back with you here, 31 minutes past the hour, and we're so happy to be joined by our next guest. She's becoming a regular, and I enjoy that because of all the things that are going on, and here we are, another crazy, busy news day. She was a longtime panelist on the hit television series The McLaughlin Group. She currently writes for The Daily Beast, is a reporter there. Eleanor Clift. Eleanor, does it ever slow down anymore?
No, there are so many storylines coming at you, and I think it's the responsibility of the press to kind of sort out what is the most important. The health care bill that's facing real challenges in the Congress is now being somewhat overshadowed by, you know, another round of questions about the president's tax returns and ties to Russia and that sort of thing. So, yeah, I think I often wonder whether, you know, these diversions are accidental or whether President Trump, it's part of his governing agenda, is to have us going in so many different directions.
Eleanor, the big headline from about maybe an hour, hour and a half ago, House leaders dispute Trump's claim Obama wiretapped him, Comey to testify. What do you make of this story? Did Obama wiretap Trump? Does Trump have any evidence? What's going on there?
Oh, I don't think there's any evidence that a president personally ordered it. That doesn't, our government doesn't even work that way. I think they're trying to find out whether the Justice Department under Obama might have sought some court legitimacy to have some entree into conversations that either took place in Trump Tower or involved Russians, principally. You can't just go in and listen in on conversations. It has to be a criminal investigation. And I think that's why Mr. Comey got an ultimatum, basically, from the House that if he he needed to show up willingly or they were going to subpoena him. So maybe he will be in a position to clear up some of the information or misinformation around these issues. And this was the Republicans pushing for it, with the Democrats, of course, agreeing. But if you didn't have the Republicans in the lead, it wouldn't happen. So this is a substantial elevating of the Republicans' interest in this kind of issue.
If President Trump does not have any evidence, what happens? Are there any consequences?
I don't know. Maybe he would take a kind of a hit in his image, I suppose, but he's taken so many of those, I don't see that another one would damage him substantially. No, I don't think there are any, aren't any real consequences. And, you know, it depends. You know, we don't know what Mr. Comey is going to say. This may not be, you know, like so much in Washington, it may not be, you know, black and white. There may be some nuances here that the president could always hang on to justify his statement. But, you know, so far it looks like he was just blowing smoke with that comment. But let's wait and see what Mr. Comey says. And, you know, there are a lot of people on both sides of the political agenda frustrated with Comey. There are many Democrats and some Republicans, too, who, you know, believe that Comey's intervention on the Hillary emails late in the election last year really did affect the outcome of the election. And so, you know, I think there's a lot of respect for Comey on the one hand, because he seems to do whatever he thinks is the correct thing, regardless of what the political fallout would be. And it's really hard to figure out, you know, is he on one side or the other? And I don't think he is. So he's got, you know, friends in Washington and enemies in Washington, and he's got a 10-year term. And so unless President Trump decides to fire him, he's going to be around longer than Mr. Trump.
When FBI Director Comey does speak, what is the scuttlebutt with reporters and around Washington? Is there going to be a probe into the Russia allegations?
Well, there is a probe that's going on in the House and Senate Intelligence Committees. They do everything behind closed door, so we don't really know what they're doing. But they've got some pretty respected people on both those panels. And in the House, Adam Schiff in particular has been on television a lot, kind of holding up his end on the House side. And on the Democratic side, you've got some respected senators on both sides of the aisle. Now, I think the real question is, will there be an independent probe ordered by the Justice Department, or will there be some sort of a commission set up? I think they've got to come up with more concrete information before the Justice Department would feel enough pressure to order an independent or an outside counsel. And that wouldn't be Jeff Sessions' decision. He has recused himself. And his new deputy has not yet been confirmed. In fact, the Republicans were threatening to hold him up to delay his confirmation if Comey didn't agree to appear. So that was a pretty strong cudgel they used to get Comey to come to Capitol Hill.
We are not even 100 days into the Trump presidency yet, and the Republicans are starting to do things that I would imagine President Trump is not particularly happy with. What is going on with the Republican Party?
They're twisting themselves into pretzels, trying to fulfill their campaign promise to repeal and replace Obamacare. And they can't agree, really, on the plan that Paul Ryan has put out there. And it's got devastating numbers from the Congressional Budget Office. And they've tried to discredit the the budget office, but the economist that heads that office was handpicked by Tom Price, who's now the HHS chair. So it's it's the best they're going to get. If they can't agree on the health care plan, then they kind of miss the deadline where they can get that through with just 51 votes. And then that affects tax reform, and you now have people beginning to wonder if President Trump is going to be able to claim any major legislative victory in his first 100 days. The Republican caucus is fractured in the House with a substantial number of conservatives in the Freedom Caucus that really don't like anything that affects the deficit negatively. And while the health care plan actually, the way it's been constructed, would lower the deficit, the conservatives still don't like it because it keeps the kind of the structure of Obamacare, keeps government in place, assisting people with health care. I don't know if you can ever come up with a plan that would satisfy them. And then you still have a handful of moderates in the Senate who are uncomfortable and looking at 18 and 20, and now they're warning Trump that his reelection could be in danger if this plan actually went through. And, you know, 24 million people lost their insurance, and it affects the negative effects hit more more strongly on the people who voted for Trump. So they're really caught between the politics and their ideology and their reelection prospects. And we're just watching this all play out, you know, before the cameras, because most of them are perfectly willing to share their frustration with whatever news outlet happens to be close by. So this is not legislation that's being devised behind closed doors. It's debated in the open, although they haven't had a single hearing. They haven't done it in the conventional way. So it's just really, it's kind of a it's like they're in a mosh pit and they're having a mud fight is what it looks like.
Well, what I am so confused about, and we've had our representative for this district on twice now, Jim Jordan, who seems to be on television and radio a lot now everywhere, because he does not support this plan. Here's where it gets in the weeds, I think, for people. Because Speaker Ryan, last week when he gave his PowerPoint presentation, said two things that were fascinating. He said, he called it this a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, and he said this is the best and only chance to change Obamacare. Is that true? Because Representative Jordan, our representative, says, Republican, says he is not voting for this the way it is. So if this is the only shot, what are the Representative Jordans and Rand Pauls talking about? And why does Paul Ryan feel this is the only shot?
Well, I think conservatives of the Republican Party have not hesitated to take on their own leadership. And that could be what we're seeing this time again. And you see Ryan in the House and McConnell in the Senate valiantly trying to, you know, get everybody lined up by arguing that this is the only opportunity and reminding them that they all ran on this issue, and if they break their promise, that could have severe consequences at the ballot box as well. It's the only opportunity in the sense that they have to get under a certain wire, I think it's by mid-April, in order to be able to use the reconciliation aspect of the legislative process, where they would only need 51 votes. And this gets into the weeds, but the Byrd Rule, which is named after former Senator Byrd, it only affects those aspects of the legislation that directly impinge on the budget. And so it can have a negative effect on the deficit, and this legislation does fulfill that requirement. And if they don't meet the deadline, they would have to then come up with legislation that was able to get 60 votes. And that would require a lot more compromise than any Republican who's speaking out now seems willing to do. And I don't see a lot of Democrats lining up to help in the Senate either.
That's...
So that's the thinking behind the now or never ultimatum. And I think also Ryan figures if he can get it through the House, he's done his job, and then it's a headache for the Senate. And the only way it could work is if they tweak it and make it more conservative to get it through the House, and then the Senate passes a bill where they make changes that make it more moderate, and then it goes to a conference committee where you have to reconcile the two bills. So legislatively, it's possible to do that, although it's still... They're so far apart, it's hard to see how they can actually come together on any reasonable compromise or reasonable plan. And, you know, Trump is calling it Ryan Care, and Ryan Care is calling it Trump Care. So neither of them wants complete ownership, apparently.
Well, one of the things that really puzzled me, last Friday we did have our representative Jordan on, and he was telling us what his plan is, which is essentially the Rand Paul plan, which is a complete repeal. And he said that they had sent that, all the Republicans, had voted and passed in the House and Senate to pass that plan and send it to President Obama. Of course, he vetoed it 7 times. But why all of a sudden have the Ryans and people of that nature, who were for that plan 7 times enough to send it to President Obama, abandon it now?
No, because they knew Obama was going to veto it. So it was never real. And Ryan, in selling the current version of the plan, says, oh, well, we ran on it in November. You know, it must have been hiding in plain sight, because I don't remember a lot of Republicans getting out there running on any kind of a health care plan. So, it, you know, it's easy to be for anything when you know it's not going to go anywhere. So, and then, you know, Ryan, of course, has been working on this for years, and the plan that they have put forward does reflect, I think, the principles that he really does believe in. But there's no particular evidence that those principles will work in reality. And I happen to think that, you know, Paul Ryan as a, you know, conservative policymaker is way overrated. I don't think his numbers ever really add up, and I think he, you know, has some ideas in his head that just don't stand up in the world, real life experience, and it's too theoretical. So you know, a lot of people's reputations are online here, and if this goes down, it would be a huge stain on Ryan's record and on the president. So they don't want that to happen. And so can they bluster through and get everybody to line up? Judging by the remarks that people are making, the answer at this point would be no. But I don't underestimate presidential arm twisting. Maybe he will be able to turn himself into Lyndon Johnson, a combination of his, you know, larger size personality and his bullying tactics. And he's going out, apparently today he'll be selling this plan in Tennessee. And, you know, so he's, you know, putting his weight behind it. But I'll bet we could see in some tweets in the coming days and weeks some frustration emerge when it begins to sink in, really, what a bust this plan is. I mean, when you have the AARP, you have the AMA, you have the American Hospital Association, there isn't a major player in healthcare or representing, you know, millions of retired people who are supporting this. It's hard to see, you know, where the base of support for this plan is.
Let's say this fails. It might pass the House, who knows, but they can only lose 2 votes in the Senate. Let's just happenstance that this bill does not pass. then what do the Republicans do? What do we do as Americans for health care? Does Obamacare stay? Do they give it another shot? What happens?
I think Lindsey Graham gave us a preview of that when he was on Morning Joe this morning. He said what they ought to do is just slow down, let Obamacare collapse of its own weight, blame the Democrats, and then the Democrats will work with them to come up with a replacement. Now, first of all, Obamacare is collapsing with the encouragement of the administration. The people who did not choose to get health insurance and who were supposed to pay a penalty on their IRS form. The form exists, but President Trump signed an executive order telling the IRS not to collect that money. So they are actively undermining the Obamacare, encouraging it to collapse. And I'm not so sure if they let Obamacare die on the vine and don't come up with any kind of plan in the meantime and say it's all the Democrats' fault, and then the Democrats suddenly will cooperate with them. I'm not sure it plays out that way. And, you know, politically it's risky, but the real risk is with the people who depend on health care, who have genuine health crises. And I can't believe some of the rhetoric coming out of the administration. They're saying, well, a lot of the health care policies today don't really count because you can't find a doctor and you can't really get the care. Well, I agree that is a problem, and that needs to be addressed. But it doesn't get better if you then take away the health care coverage and leave people, you know, totally out there on their own, again, relying on emergency rooms, which is why you have hospital associations so adamantly opposed to this plan, because it's been working pretty well for them. They don't have nearly the uncompensated coverage that they had before the ACA took place.
You know, Eleanor, what I don't understand is, because I've heard what Lindsey Graham said, let it die on the vine, and I've heard President Trump say that too. Well, maybe we should just let it die, and then people can see how bad it really is. But what I don't understand is if they do that, if they let it die, you can be sure that people out in front of the Democratic Party, Chuck Schumer, Bernie Sanders, Hillary Clinton might get back, but President Obama are certainly going to say, Joe Biden, are going to say, you know, you purposely did this. You didn't collect the penalties. You defunded. There's a lot of reasons this died on the vine. And even the Republicans, even if that's not enough, even the Republicans, the Ryans and the Trumps, are saying they want to keep pre-existing conditions and stay on your parents' plan until you're 26 in place. If they let it just die, doesn't that go away?
No. If they don't get the support. Well, there's still some taxes that would be in place, which are paying for things. Is it a surcharge on people who make over a certain amount? And, you know, what the Trump people would do, I think, if it came to that dire situation, and what is actually part of their plan now, is to simply raid Medicaid. And they're moving millions. They want to move millions out of Medicaid. And they portray Medicaid as, oh, you know, that's for poor people. And they, you know, the image that you have is, you know, kind of malingerers who, you know, don't work and are relying on Medicaid. Well, you look at the population that uses Medicaid, huge number are children. And then secondly, I think I saw a figure that said 60% goes to long-term care. The parents of a lot of baby boomers today who, you know, maybe spent down the parents' assets in order to qualify them for Medicaid, because we don't have a rational system for long-term care either. So the population in Medicaid, should not be used to, further the aims of this bill. But that's what they do. They raid Medicaid, and you do see resistance among governors. John Kasich would be one, Governor Kasich, who have expanded Medicaid and have seen firsthand, the hundreds of thousands of people in the state who, use the program and have benefited from it. And they're not comfortable with the changes that this plan makes to Medicaid either.
The two big issues here in Ohio where I sit, and I know why Governor Kasich is saying this, is the Medicaid issue is essentially to help people who have been drug addicted, whether by heroin or the opiate epidemic, and that a lot of seniors use Medicaid to pay for their prescriptions if they don't have high income, high social securities, and aren't able to pay for the supplement plans. So those are two big things, where they're not just talking about the poor. So that's a big issue. But in the last 5 minutes, Eleanor, I got to talk about the tax return. Boy, oh boy, that was a big... I bet Rachel Maddow had tremendous ratings last night by saying she was going to do that. Did it mean anything?
Well, they started promoing it at least in the show before Rachel Maddow, and I, like many other people, sat there while she went through the whole history of the tax return issue, not only just with Trump but other presidents, for the first half hour before she finally told us what they had. And my first thought was, my goodness, this sounds like you probably got it from Donald Trump. And then David K. Johnson came on and admitted that it occurred to him, and he received this in the mail, that it could have been Donald Trump himself leaking this, because he was known to do that when he was in New York. He even would call up people and pretend he was his own agent and do interviews as Donald Trump's agent. This form is mostly good for Donald Trump, as far as I can tell. And if you're an average person and you hear he paid $38 million in taxes, okay, so maybe it was a couple of million less than maybe he should, and maybe he had a write-up. That's a lot of money. And I don't think the release of this return hurts him one whit. I heard somebody point out that on the second page, I think it says client copy.
I heard that.
So it didn't come from IRS. Yeah, and so it comes with someone who had access to Donald Trump's tax records, so who could very well be an ally. And anyway, he's got us talking about it all day today, but I don't think this hurts Trump, this particular return, and maybe it increases the pressure with April 15th coming up for him to release this year's tax returns, which is traditional for sitting presidents. You get that and the vice president's return. Be interesting if we get Pence's return and not Trump's, if Pence follows the tradition. So we'll see.
Eleanor, final question for you, because people have been talking about it today. And one interesting question we got about the tax returns was David K. Johnson, the reporter. There have been articles, op-eds written today that this was illegal because you can't take somebody's tax returns and publish it, and reporters should stop hiding behind the First Amendment. What's your feeling on that?
It's a leaked document. Other leaked documents have a very storied history, Pentagon Papers for one. I don't see anyone bringing a case against David K. Johnson. If he concealed it and didn't write about it, I think he'd get a lot more criticism given the context of today's times. But the return does seem to clear some bureaucrat at the IRS, which I think the White House has been worried about. They refer to all of the Obama holdovers, most of them career professional civil service protected, as the deep state, which they're sort of committed to undoing. So I just don't think this tax return is that big a deal, and I respectfully suggest that while it may be technically illegal, I don't see anybody bringing any kind of a lawsuit, not even Donald Trump, who's very prodigious when it comes to filing lawsuits.
And for all the people out there who say, why does he need to show it? Why is it important? What is the answer to that?
Why does he need to show the tax return?
Yes.
Well, it's part of the vetting that we put every president through since Richard Nixon, and Rachel Maddow last night pointed out that there were some questions about Nixon not having paid enough, and he actually did pay more money after some returns were made public. And it's part of our constitutional history that you want to show. One of the things you look for in someone's tax returns is to make sure they're not beholden to a foreign entity. And I don't think anyone thought that was particularly relevant for many, many decades, but suddenly with Donald Trump, it does seem like a relevant question to look for.
And
I think for pure curiosity, if you wonder if he's really as rich as he says or he's given away as much money as he says, it would be kind of a truth test. That's lesser in terms of priorities in my mind, but I still think it's a requirement, just as a president is supposed to make their medical history known as well.
Eleanor Cliff from the Daily Beast. Eleanor, thank you so much. It's always a pleasure.
Sure. Thank
you.
Bye bye.
Okay, I tell you what, we have about a minute left here, so I'm going to hold open the line here. If somebody wants to call in and give an opinion about Eleanor, if we or anything else we talked about, Leslie Dock, we thank him for coming on. Former insider in the healthcare world under President Obama. 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. If you want to come in really quick, we can fit what in before we wrap up today. And again, it was Leslie Dock, former senior counselor for the Department of Health and Human Services under President Obama. That was the first guest. And Eleanor Cliff, former panelist on the McLaughlin Group and current writer for the Daily Beast, was the second half. I guess we don't have any calls today, so that is the end of our program. Hope you enjoyed it. We'll be back tomorrow. Stay tuned for much more programming here on WWGH Radio. But for this day, this is Scott Spears heading for the dugout.
I'm gonna be 94 years old. I'm gonna be